Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we are in the final round of mayoral candidate interviews before the New York primary on September 10th. And this is a call-in round, direct access for you to the leading candidates. On Wednesday, we had Republican hopeful John Catsimatidis. Now his chief rival for the nomination, Joe Loda, the former deputy mayor under Rudy Giuliani and former MTA CEO. Mr. Loda, thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
And listeners, it's 212-433-WNYC if you want to ask Joe Loda a question. As I said before the break, we'll save some of our lines for registered New York City Republicans because you're the ones who can actually vote in this primary. But since there aren't very many New York City registered Republicans, anyone may call with a question for Joe Loda, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Mr. Loda, as the calls are coming in, to make a segue from our last conversation, I don't know if you were able to hear it, but what's your opinion of the importance of universal pre-K to education and, for that matter, equality in New York City, as we were discussing in our last segment relevant to Bill de Blasio's proposal?
I absolutely believe that getting our children earlier in their lives and beginning the education process is critical for success on so many different levels. First, the earlier we can get them and focus their mind and mold them to be able to become, productive in society is important. Second, if we catch children at an earlier age with any learning disabilities, all studies show that we have a better chance of correcting those learning disabilities and also to help them for the rest of their lives. I believe it's really critical. One of the things I think we need to do with all pre-K programs is start to have, at least in this city, a curriculum. I don't want to use the word core curriculum because it's got all kinds of connotations to it, but we need to make sure that pre-K programs are there to help start molding their minds and helping them on understanding the decision-making process. I think it's critical. I think we have to start them at an earlier age. We have to also then, once they get into grammar school and into high school, we got to start talking about longer days. And we have to start talking about longer school years.
Would you have a plan to fund universal pre-K full day in New York City?
Right now, Bill de Blasio's proposal to automatically just say we are going to tax to do it is, I think, incorrect. It's not the right way to do it. He's proposing a tax that he believes will generate $400 to $500 million. We have currently a $70 billion budget. When I was the budget director of the city of New York, we found efficiency savings in 4 and 5% of the budget, allowing then-Mayor Giuliani, then-Speaker Peter Vallone the opportunity to expand programs with the efficiencies that we found. When you actually think about this, it's less – what he's talking about in raising taxes ends up being less than 1% of the entire city budget. I'm going to find a budget director. I will hire a budget director. It'll get me significantly more than 1%, and we will not be talking about funding taxes or raising taxes to fund new programs.
Now, also before we go to the phones, can I get your take on the big news of the last day out of City Council? They overrode Mayor Bloomberg's vetoes, as you know, of the two policing bills, one to create an inspector general with subpoena power to oversee police policy and to allow New Yorkers to sue in state court if they think they've been racially profiled by police officers. Do you support either of those bills?
I absolutely do not support either of those bills. I think it's outrageous the action of City Council, both passing the bill the first time and then overriding the mayor's veto. I actually believe in the most critical part of it is the chilling effect it's going to have on the police officers in this city. And you mentioned that people will be able to go to state court to be able to sue, but you left out an important part. They'll be able to sue those cops individually, not corporately, not sue the city of New York, sue a cop individually.
Out of their personal pockets?
Out of their personal pockets. That's what that legislation says. And, police officers don't make a whole lot of money. They are clearly in the middle class in this city, and people will be suing them for millions and millions of dollars. It is going to have a chilling effect on the great work of the men and women of the NYPD.
And one other thing on stop and frisk. You were deputy mayor for operations in Rudy Giuliani's second term. Opponents of stop and frisk say the policy began in those years, but your police department was only stopping about 80,000 people. Ray Kelly and Mayor Bloomberg expanded it to more than 700,000 at its peak. Is that 80,000 figure accurate?
I don't have access to the numbers, but let me tell you, the very opening statement that these folks have made, that it was started under Rudy Giuliani, it's crazy. 1968. Rudy Giuliani was in law school in 1968 at NYU. I was in eighth grade. In 1968, the Supreme Court of the United States, in an 8-1 ruling, gave police officers the right and the directions of allowing them to do stop, question, and frisk. This was a ruling that was actually written by Chief Justice Earl Warren, not the most conservative member of the court, who actually wrote in plain, simple English all of the ways in which and the reasons why cops should be able to stop somebody for suspicious activity. This has been going on now. My father's a New York City cop. My father would tell me that stop and question and frisk was actually happening in the early 60s. So I don't even know when it started. So the idea that it started under Rudy Giuliani, the outrageous statement made by Christine Quinn that stop and frisk was invented by Bill Bratton. It's outrageous that people can make these statements without understanding fact. Fact of the matter is, stop and frisk has been used for quite a long period of time.
212-433-WNYC for Republican mayoral hopeful Joe Loda. Lisa in Manhattan, you're on the air. Lisa, turn your radio off and hi.
Okay. Hi, Brian. Love your show. My question to Mr. Loda is about the proposed dump on 91st in York.
And what's your question about
it? And what is his position on it? I'm told that he's against it. And if he is, what would he do to stop it from happening?
Now, a little bit of context on this for people who don't know what this is about. Mayor Bloomberg has proposed this. I think it's part of not only the city's sanitation plan, but also kind of an environmental justice plan. So there isn't such a concentration of polluting facilities in low-income neighborhoods. So 91st in York, a marine waste transfer station. Joe Loder.
Well, Brian, I have always been opposed to opening it up. I'm the guy who closed it. In 1999, I closed that marine transfer station as part of the process in closing the Fresh Kills dump. Biggest mistake I made when I closed it, I didn't knock it down. And the idea that, where's this garbage going to go? It's not going to go to any other community in the city of New York. It's going to go exactly to where it's going to today. When we closed it down, prior to that, I had negotiated a contract with a waster energy plant in Newark, New Jersey. We pay them to take our garbage. They want our garbage, and our garbage should continue to go there. This idea that there's an environmental justice issue and all of the hyperbole that's going on about this issue, the garbage will continue to go where it's going to people who want to take it. Because one of the things that's happening, New Jersey's getting really good energy, low-cost energy, by burning New York City garbage. They want it. Let's give it to them. The fact of the matter is, anybody who tells you that this will end up with going to Brooklyn or going to Bronx is just throwing up issues that are absolutely patently false. They know they're false, and if they don't know they're false, we have a real problem in a public debate in the city.
Are you saying that the notion that this is an environmental justice issue because of the location of this proposed facility, that that's the false issue?
No, the false issue is that it's an if we don't open this, it's an environmental injustice. Look at the words that were being thrown around. Christine Quinn decides to call it environmental racism. If we don't open this up, it's environmental racism. Environmental racism, why is that? Because it'll end up, according to her, burdening the Bronx or burdening Brooklyn. And believe me, that couldn't be farther from the truth. The garbage is currently going to New Jersey. It should continue to go to New Jersey. Just as a fact of the matter, that marine there are 11 sanitation districts in the borough of Manhattan. Five of them would go to this proposed marine transfer station. The remaining six would continue to go to New Jersey. It makes no sense. The IBO has put out a report that this is going to cost three times. So not only is it environmentally unsafe, it's unsound, it's economically wrong. There's no reason in the world why we should be paying more for getting rid of our garbage by building this site.
Just one more thing on this. I think the proponents of the site don't say that this could hurt the Bronx or wherever because the garbage would wind up there. It's that the trucks that sit there to, you know, deliver the garbage from around the city or around Manhattan, mm-hmm, to the boats that go to New Jersey, that it's the idling of the trucks and things like that that create the pollution hazard, no?
I've been involved in this debate now for 6 months and have been a huge proponent, one of the first ones out there saying that this dump won't open when I'm mayor. And the argument has always been it's not an environmental justice issue on the part of the people who want to close it. The people who want to keep it open are the ones who are arguing environmental justice.
Right.
And
exactly.
And they're arguing it's environmental justice to open it so that because they believe, and they keep saying it. Look at what Eddie Batista keeps saying over and over again. If this doesn't open, the garbage is going to go to the outer boroughs. It's not true.
Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Joe Loda. Hi, Michael. Oh, by the way, her line that just opened, screeners, let's hold that open for somebody from Staten Island. We don't have any Staten Island callers yet. I know you're out there, and there are so many Republicans who vote in the Republican primary. You probably cannot win a Republican primary or a mayoral election in November without a big turnout of Staten Island Republicans. So let's save a line for Staten Island here at 212-433-WNYC 433-9692. But Michael in Brooklyn, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I've been a resident of New York City my whole life. I live in Brooklyn. I'm a retired teacher. And I don't hear much conversation with any candidates talking about the extremely high cost of rent in this city. As a retired teacher, I'm on a pension. I'm a taxpayer. I could hardly afford to live in Brooklyn. And I don't hear any candidates talking about that. I'd like your opinion on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Certainly,
Michael,
housing is an issue the candidates do talk about. How about your housing
And, Michael,
position?
I talk wherever I go about affordability being the number one quality of life issue in New York. We are running the risk of losing the middle class in this city and the retired and the seniors in this city because while their fixed incomes are not going up, rents continue to go up, property taxes keep going up, water bills keep going up, utility costs keep going up. I, as mayor, can focus directly on those bills that were causing landlords to increase their rents just by the fact that they're, even in periods of time when the value of their buildings have gone down in 2008 and 2009, the city would increase their assessed values, therefore making them pay even more, not based on the market, but based on the fact that I believe the city of New York has been setting property tax assessments based on their spending habits. We have a problem in the city of New York. We have doubled the size of our budget in the last 11 years. The budget that was given to Mayor Bloomberg when he came into office was $36 billion. It's now $70 billion. It's doubled. If you look at it, it's gone up 56% over the rate of inflation over that period of time. Nothing has grown like that. If we don't get the cost of the city of New York under control, we are not going to get our taxes under control because they are directly linked. And I agree with you. As mayor, I will do everything I can to make sure that assessed values don't go up outside of where the market value is. I want to make sure. I want an explanation. Why have our water bills been going up double digits every year for the last 10 years? This year it went up 6%. They were so proud of themselves that it didn't go up 10%, that it only went up 6% when the rate of inflation in New York was about 2.5 to 3%. No one's asking those questions. Our water system, what are we getting for it in return? The lack of communication coming out of the administration and explaining why things are going up is a very big concern of mine. And as far as housing is concerned, I have proposals to how to build more affordable housing. I am a supporter of the Housing First program. My years as an investment banker, the first 6 years when I moved back to New York after graduate school, what I did exclusively was finance low and moderate income housing, both here in New York and in Connecticut and in Massachusetts. So I'm experienced with this. What I want to do is create a program that provides an incentive, and anyone is building any type of housing in New York, 20% to 30% ought to be for affordable housing. And second, I want to work with the governor on getting any state agencies that have surplus properties, give them to me. I want to be able to use it for affordable housing, and I don't. When the post office wants to close down any one of their post offices anywhere in the city of New York, I want them to give it to me as mayor because I want to convert that space and build beautiful buildings into affordable housing.
Republican mayoral hopeful Joe Loda taking your calls on WNYC. And here's a Staten Island caller. Ted, you're on the air. Ted, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Brian. Mr. Loda, I really respect the work that you did when you were running the transportation, the MTA. But I still find that there's a great lack of empathy on the part of people that run the system, particularly the bus drivers, for the riders. And I wonder what you would do to foster that kind of empathy, and would you yourself commit to taking public transportation to and from work when you're mayor?
I take public transportation today. I will take it when I'm mayor as well. You know, I've lived in this city in my entire life, and I can remember when I first started going on the subways alone. It's hard to believe my mother let me on the subways alone when I was 6 years old to go to school. But be that as it may, I love our subway system. I'm starting to take more buses lately to go across town. And when it comes to empathy, you know, one of the first things that I did, and it was controversial at the MTA, I made everybody understand that we no longer have riders. We have customers. And I did that from one point of view. You treat customers differently, you know, and you, they should do service with a smile. They should be, as you said, empathetic. They need to understand that the public are their customers. The public is who pays for their salaries. It's amazing to me whenever I go up to the old token booths and try to get somebody to pay attention. I ask you, go by and look. Why don't they smile at people? Why are they so appear to be, you know, not happy? Quite honestly, yes, I think we need to go through a training program with our workers to understand that we should be happy and pleasant with the people who are paying their salaries.
I see that Mr. Katsimatidis has been pushing hard to tar you as a toll raiser for Staten Islanders for the Verrazano Bridge from your MTA CEO days. He says your answer that the toll hikes were approved before you took over makes you a bureaucrat, not a leader. What do you say to Staten Islanders about that, or anything to compete for their primary votes?
Here's what I say. In 2009, Governor Patterson, Speaker Silver, and the majority leader at the time, Malcolm Smith, all decided to raid the MTA of funds that had been dedicated to the MTA for almost 20 years straight, took the money out because they couldn't figure out a way to balance their own budget. They wanted to balance it on the back of the New York City riders. And with that, they said in writing, and it was printed in all the newspapers in New York, that due to this, there would be fare and toll increases in 2009, 2011, 2013, and go on every 2 years thereafter. So the fact of the matter is, by raiding the money is what's caused the problem. Here's what I did when I was at the MTA, because I was outraged by the actions taken by these politicians in Albany. What I decided to do was I wanted to find a way to reduce expenses, and I did. For the first time in the history of the MTA, expenses in 2012, discretionary expenses, were less than they were in 2011. Very, very rarely do you see that happening in any kind of governmental agency. Now, the fact of the matter is, to call me a bureaucrat, I'm a leader and a visionary. I had enough wherewithal to make sure that the fare increase that went in wasn't as high as was originally projected. We did that by managing the agency better. John could call me anything he wants, but calling me a bureaucrat, the New York Times in an editorial said at the very end of the Giuliani administration, one of the more pleasing things was watching Joe Loda, who was like a hot knife through butter, cutting through bureaucracy, because I hate the bureaucracy and I don't have a lot of room for bureaucrats. God forbid you're a bureaucrat when I become mayor.
We'll continue with Joe Loda and your calls in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Republican mayoral hopeful Joe Loda. When Mr. Katsimatidis was here Wednesday, I asked him who would be more electable against the Democrat in November, suggesting that you tend to make a better impression on Democrats who have I've asked to compare the two of you. Here was his response.
I'm the only one that has the financial wherewithal to wage a campaign. I am sure the Democratic candidates would rather run against Joe because, you know, he doesn't have the money to complete the race. I have it. And the last time a Republican ran, Mitt Romney, he lost to five boroughs, 81-19. I am running as a Republican liberal. I am pro-business, but I'm pro-people, and I believe I will get a large block of Reagan Democrats and Clinton Democrats that will vote for me and be able to win in November. And I could do it.
John Katsimatidis on Wednesday. You want to make the case to Republican primary voters? Because electability is always an issue. People in whatever their party is want to win the general election. So argue that you would be the more competitive against a de Blasio or a Thompson or a Quinn?
Sure. You know, this idea that money, which seems to be John's only asset, is the way he's going to win is really, really unfortunate. I actually believe that, you know, the races for mayor always boil down to a couple of questions. And it comes down to two different people in the race. And that here are the questions that New Yorkers ask. Which one is going to fix the fiscal problems in New York? Which one is going to be better at making sure that my children get educated? Which one is going to make sure that I stay safe and this crime continues to go down? Which one is going to remember to pick up the garbage every single day? Which one is never going to forget to pick up the snow like we've had in the last couple of years in New York City? Quite honestly, John has not put forward a vision, one iota of a vision, other than the fact that he's a businessman and he's rich. The fact of the matter is, I don't think John is has any cross, you know, the fact that he's been a Democrat his whole life and just a few years ago decided to become a Republican makes him more marketable, I think, is delusional on his part.
There is somebody we could have said those same things about in 2001, right? In other words, we had Michael Bloomberg
coming out of the business sector
and also a previous Democrat, and maybe he's made the case for businessmen coming in and running the city.
I've spent more of my life in business than I have in the private sector,
significantly more than in the public sector.
I've spent more time in the private sector being a businessman than being in government. But I don't believe for one second Mike Bloomberg won in 2001 because of his money. I don't believe it at all. Mark Green was such a flawed candidate, it's not surprising, and it shouldn't be surprising to anyone, that that was another election that Mark Green lost.
Thomas in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC with Joe Loda. Hello.
Yeah, hi there. Even more rare than being a Republican in New York City, I am a disabled Republican. I'm also a neighbor of Joe Loda's over here in Brooklyn Heights. And I have to say, your two answers about the bureaucracy being problematic and transportation issues are really important. And as a segue into my question, the disabled community has been fighting for increased access to accessible taxis. And I think that part of the problem could be solved by a more creative market-based solutions in using paratransit dollars to access accessible taxis and coming up with a different transportation model that meets the spontaneous needs of New Yorkers with disabilities. And I can't tell you how exasperating it is. From my apartment in Brooklyn Heights, I can look across the river at my office at Wall Street where I work for a company that provides personal care. I can see my office, but I can't get there on subway very easily. I have to get off at Bowling Green and then roll 8 blocks, or I have to go all the way up to West Broadway and Chamber Street.
The policy question for Mr. Loda is?
Accessible taxis. What is his position, and what will he do? What will he direct his TLC commissioner to pursue?
Thank you very much. And, of course, this is a great source of dissatisfaction for many disabled New Yorkers with the small number of the new taxis that are going to be accessible.
It's a great source of dissatisfaction for me, and I'm not disabled. I think the actions taken by the TLC and the current administration are anti-market and an anti-positive approach. We've gotten a situation where the city has decided that there should only be one taxi and one taxi style in the future. I mean, that's not the role of government. Just imagine what would happen if this actually happened and that taxi was recalled. We'd have no taxis on the street. There's no logic to these bureaucratic decisions that are being made by the TLC and whoever they're taking instructions from in City Hall. The fact of the matter is we need to have market forces. We need to have an ability. Using paratransit, as was mentioned by Thomas, is absolutely the right way to go. There are fleets of cars already out there that are on call for folks who are disabled. We need to be able to do it. And the other thing that we need to be able to do is to take advantage of technology, being able to take advantage of the fact that you can go on your iPhone or your iPad or your BlackBerry and touch Uber or any one of these types of services and actually call a car. It could be there in a few minutes, and you have an opportunity to call a car that would also be disabled, available for disabled individuals, and depending on the disability, whether or not you needed to get a wheelchair in the car or whether or not you're on crutches, it all depends on what's there. The fact of the matter is the government shouldn't be telling the private sector what to do. The private sector should be using market ideas and market forces and the change at which all of this is coming about to the advantage of the customer.
Does that mean take away the whole medallion system? Just let whatever car wants to go out there, pick up passengers? Would you go that far?
No, I won't go that far yet, but because these are guys who've made an investment and have a right to their return on investment. But there should be no problem in having alternative ways for people to get around.
Shia in Borough Park, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Brian. I'm a long listener, first-time caller. Joe, I'm a registered Republican living in Barbac. I'm a civic Jew, Orthodox Jew. Lately was the Bloomberg issue with the teacher of the fam. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I am.
That ritual circumcision, ritual practiced by Orthodox rabbis in Brooklyn. What's your position on the tzitzit affair?
Ritual circumcision. Is this a mayoral issue?
Oh, it's very much. I get this question every single day and have been for the last 4 months. My position is very straightforward. First off, I think what the Department of Health did is absolutely wrong. Government shouldn't be interfering in any way, shape, or form with religious practice. The current state of affairs right now is that the Department of Health hands a piece of paper to all the parents and requires that they sign that piece of paper. I think signatures are also not necessary. Here's as far as I will go. If anyone wants to be able to perform and participate in this ritualistic circumcision, the city of New York will provide a piece of paper that says what the risks are. Do what you want with that piece of paper, but you don't have to sign it. You don't have to. The role of government is to inform and to educate, not to stop, not to change, but to educate and inform. And that's simply it. That's all I'll do when it comes to this religious practice.
We have 1 minute left. I'll say to you, as I said to John Katsimatidis on Wednesday, this is the last round of our interviews in the primary season. If you win the primary, we'll invite you back in the general election season. Make your final case for Republican primary voters to pick you over Katsimatidis or George McDonald.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to all the voters in New York, Republicans as well as the Democrats who I'll need in the general election overall. As I think about running for mayor and I think about the fact that I have lived in New York my entire life, I want this city to be the city that that we can continue to live in, that we can continue to work in, that we have a city that has a more diversified economy than we have now, and not just any kind of jobs, but really, really great jobs. I want to be a mayor who is remembered as someone who has reformed our education system. I will work with teachers. I will give the teachers the resources necessary to and their professional development so that they are fully prepared to teach our young children. I also want to separate those kids who are disciplinary problems in the classroom and send them away. I want to be a mayor who actually reforms education. And of course, when it comes to quality of life issues, we need to someone who will always support the NYPD, keeping us safe so that our families can live in the city.
Joe Lota, thank you very much for your accessibility during this primary campaign. We have the news at 11:30 coming up. And then what we learn about gender identity from Bradley, now Chelsea, Manning, and a call in for dual citizens now that Senator Ted Cruz has renounced his Canadianness to run for president. First, the latest news.